Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
Well, a Merry Christmas to all y'all. I hope everyone has had a great time with their family and friends in this unbelievably wonderful holiday season. During this week of Christmas, we are swapping shows on the feeds inside our podcast network. On this, the Rise Together feed, we're going to put up an episode of the new EDU. It's all about racism in the classroom, and I hope that you can take something away from this in the same way that I was able to as well. I love the work that Hope and Wade are doing inside of this podcast, and think that there's something amazing for you in this episode. So, anyway, I hope that you'll give it a listen. I want to send you, again, the very, very best for this Christmas season. And I'm wishing every bit of greatness for the year that sits in front of us. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Here's to an amazing 2021 ahead.
Great teachers don't just come from the classroom. They can be found almost anywhere in your life.
That's why we,
Wade and Hope King,
created this podcast to connect you with the stories, the tools, and the joy you need to take education to the next level.
Nowadays, everyone's an educator.
Whether you chose that career or not.
And we're all in this together.
So come on, let's do this.
Welcome to the new EDU.
Welcome to the podcast. Today, we are so excited to have one of our very good friends and fellow educators, Chivy Brooks, in the house. And he's actually in the house.
Literally
in the house. He lives right around the street, a block over.
One of the coolest people I know.
Man. Oh, he's setting you up. I didn't do a good enough job setting you up. No, but he is. And we, you know, on this podcast, we've talked a lot about creating a space to have conversations about the here and now and what's going on in education, what's going on in our homes, how we're, you know, helping our students navigate this difficult time. But also we want to create a space, you know, to have these critical conversations. Yes. I used to want to call them difficult conversations. But they're, and while they might be difficult, they're critical. They're important. They're even more than just difficult.
For sure.
Right?
For sure.
So we're excited to have you here and to dive into just some content about the work that you do. So I guess we can kind of start there. Just kind of fill us in about the work that you do, not only in your home, but also in your school. And we know you fill big roles in this community here in Atlanta. So just kind of fill us in a little bit.
Sure. I mean, for the most part, I mean, I'm a teacher first. I teach in Clayton County, Georgia at Charles R. Drew High School. I am a high school teacher. I teach economics and government. And outside of that, I guess, you know, I would be what we call a teacherpreneur nowadays, whether that be we have, you know, merch like clothing lines and things like that. But then more importantly, we have the Teacher Talk Live platform where nightly we're having conversations on my Instagram Live with educators, influencers, politicians, folks who are stakeholders in our community about just critical things, like things that really matter, that really can move how we see the world and what our world around us is. So that's a lot of the work that I do. You know, anytime there is a need in our community and I have the ability to be of some good or some value to fixing something or being a part of why something gets better, I'm trying to be there.
Yeah, and you are there all the time. I've been along this ride with you, I guess, during the summertime, and I was actually able to observe some instrumental movements that you've really been a part of and how your voice is heard not only, and you guys listening, he's being very humble. He's not talking about the people who he is influencing out there in the Atlanta community. I mean, he's got T.I. He's got the leader of the NAACP. Like, they listen to him because they see what he's doing in this community. And it's really, really moving to see how all of these influential people just listen to teachers. Yeah. And that's, I think, what this podcast is about. It's about creating relationships between not only teachers and different types of people, but also parents and families and these individuals who have never been teachers before. And so maybe you can kind of understand where teachers are coming from and vice versa. But it's been really, really cool to see the impact that you have made. I mean, we know this has been a tough summer, and we know that these kids are going back to school, some virtually, some hybrid, some in person. Mm-hmm. And these are topics that we can't shy away from, especially as teachers and in the home too.
Oh, 100%. But I think one of the things that I'm starting to realize, we are now in what, like week four or three or four of, going back virtual for school. A lot of my students, I'm hearing a lot of apathy. I'm hearing a lot of, the things are messed up. They've always been messed up. They're always going to be messed up. And so, honestly, the bulk of my work, especially as an educator and dealing with this social justice awareness with my students, is helping to empower them to realize that they actually can do something. And so while you talk about things like, being out there marching with T.I. or being in the power rooms with the T.I.s and the Phaedra Parks of the world and folks like that, when I'm able to show my kids those receipts, they see those pictures, whatever, of what happened over the summer, and they see their classmates and students from our school right there too, it makes it real to them. And I think for me, like, that's kind of been like where the work needs to be done. We got to build these kids up to believe that they can do something.
Yeah, and it's like you said, and it's so sad that we as teachers have to build up these kids to where they almost, like you said, lack of apathy, but it's almost like they feel hopeless because this has always been. Yeah. And I think with our generation, I mean, it's kind of that way too. And so how do you suggest we talk ourselves out of that to impact the young people that are coming up?
I think it's just by being an example. You know, when our kids are politically apathetic, it is because they're not seeing examples of people actually making change around them. So it doesn't seem real. I mean, we always say you can't be what you don't see, so you can't be change if you don't see change, unfortunately. And we are in a time where you have to sometimes be and do things that don't even exist yet. And so being an example to kids as to what that looks like is what we got to do. So it just means doing it. It really is that simple. Do it. Document it, curate it, let the kids see it.
Yeah, instead of just talking about it, you gotta exemplify it. And I think one of the greatest examples of that is recently with the NBA, WNBA, and yes. MLB.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of people out there are saying, well, what good is that going to do that they decided to boycott one game? Yo, you don't get it. Like, it impacts their pocket because it comes from the corporations and the advertisements and the ownership. And they're willing to say, listen, look, if y'all can't hear us, you can't watch us either. So it is what it is. I know that's in a big scheme, but even if our role models for these young people can start exemplifying it, we can too. Yeah. We can do it in different ways, obviously. But everyone has a platform, everyone has an influence, and everybody can be an example. And that's kind of what we're here to talk about today, is what does this look like to have these type of courageous conversations? Where does it start? What does it mean to be about it? Mm. And we've been talking, all three of us, this summer. We've been doing things together this summer, and the work has just started. So I'm just going to kind of pass it over to you. What do courageous conversations, Hope? What do those mean in your eyes?
It's very interesting, the shift all of a sudden. I couldn't even get a word in with Wade King.
Uh-oh.
This is the last podcast. He had to ask me if he could talk. And now all of a sudden, the tides have shifted here.
Hey.
No, what I was going to say is, when you're talking about the NBA and right. Major League Baseball, what an amazing opportunity to open up conversations in your home.
Yeah.
Like, what the perfect opportunity. And the opportunity is now being presented in your household when your kids are saying, well, why are they boycotting these games? What's happening? To not just shy away from the conversation. And that's why I'm so excited that we're able to talk about this today and we're able to give, you know, strategies and things that you can start implementing at home and also in the classroom. But, you know, things are changing.
Yeah.
And things are changing on social media, and they're changing, you know, what we're seeing on television and the way that we're seeing different corporations and businesses stand up and speak out. And they're not just doing it when it's relevant, and they're not just doing it on a Blackout Tuesday,
right.
But it's something that we're starting to see consistently. Like, what an amazing opportunity to embrace every single one of those changes that we see. And when kids start asking questions, to be able to have those conversations. So really, this boils down to the work begins at home.
Yeah, and I think with NBA, MLB, you know, all these different leagues, like hitting a pause button or even a full stop button, because they're having a conversation now about actually ending the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
It's forcing everyone to address it. I mean, one of my biggest beefs when they started having a conversation about getting the league back going, it's funny, I was talking with Dwight Howard. His uncle is Paul Howard, the district attorney.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were in Paul Howard's office and Dwight was there and we were talking about the league starting back. And he was like, how do you feel? And I said, yo, I don't like it. I feel like it's a distraction from all the social justice work that we're doing. I feel like a lot of the reason why the movement was so effective and why there was so much energy is because people had nothing else to have to deal with. Mm. Right. So you had time. You had no sports. You had no game to go run to and sit in front of. Mm. And so when I felt like when the league came back, it took a lot of the energy away. And guess what? It did. Now you're seeing them talking about pulling it back. And you got all this stuff going on in Wisconsin and around the country.
Right.
You better believe this weekend, Atlanta's about to be moving again.
Yep.
Cities across the country are about to be moving again. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot to do with sports not being a distraction right now. And I think these athletes understand that. They know that. Even among themselves, some of them are not in agreement as to whether or not they should be playing right now. Mm-hmm. Because they feel like these social justice things matter more.
I mean, when it came back, I was just as excited as anybody just to see sports back.
For sure.
But I thought the same thing as you did. But going back to what Hope was talking about with these corporations being intentional about infusing it, the NBA was like, listen, look, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it as best we can because we have a platform. Mm-hmm. And we saw that. And they didn't just shut it. They just didn't shut out the notion of Black Lives Matter. They didn't shut out the notion of, I mean, most of the players have some type of statement on the back of their jerseys.
Right.
Like, that is crazy. And then for them to go the extra step to say, listen, look, we're not just going to show this to the world. We're not just going to put it out there and talk whatever we say. It's not really, yeah, talk the talk, but we're going to walk and talk at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we're going to show you what we really mean. And it's not the owners, and it's not the big wigs of the NBA or all of these organizations. It's the players.
Yeah.
It's the players that are saying, hey, listen, look, we can do this. We have ownership over what we do. And I think as people and humans and parents and spouses and whoever, we need to take that as the example on, hey, what can I sacrifice? What can I do better intentionally throughout everything I do during my everyday life, whether it's my hobbies, whether it's meeting in the neighborhood, what at the church? What can I do that exemplifies what they have done? I mean, it's a true, true testament on where our nation really is right now, and it's focusing on that and keeping it going. And they said exactly what you said. Listen, look, we're back. These people are watching us. They may not be in the seats, but they're watching us. They're not focused on what's really happening in our nation. We're going to bring attention back to it.
Yeah.
And they took that seriously, and we need to take it seriously too.
Well, I was going to say, that's a fact. I was having a conversation with my friend Ja. He owns the AEBL Basketball League. It's like a lot of NBA players during the summer come out to Atlanta and go play in the league here in Atlanta. And he was talking about how, like, in a lot of these big corporations, you know, the few Black executives that are there sometimes are so timid about speaking on some of these issues that when they choose not to speak, what happens is that everyone thinks it's okay, and then they start ignoring things. And so it's that call to action. Like, when we are present, whether you're Black, whether you're white, whomever you are, you have a responsibility to be very vocal about the stuff going on. Because when you're quiet, it allows people to think it's okay. It allows us to keep on with business as usual, and that has to stop.
You know, when Wade was challenging, what is the sacrifice that you're going to make? The best form of sacrifice comes in action, right?
Yes.
It's not just about internally doing the work. And while that work, I have learned, while that work is extremely important, right? I, for too long, did the internal work without doing anything externally, and that's problematic, right? Mm. Especially when we're leaders in our community, especially when we're leaders of our home, yeah. right? People always say, well, it doesn't matter. I don't have an influence. Listen, everybody has yes. an influence. Yes. You influence. If you are listening to this podcast right now, you influence someone, and therefore, it is our job to do this work. So, you know, how do we, because we get questions all the time, and we've kind of talked about some of this stuff. It's questions that Wade and I've had that we've come to you with, as a matter of fact. But, you know, how do we start this work at home? Because a lot of people are like, well, I just feel like my kids are too young. And you have Christian, who yeah, is
four.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to already have those conversations with him
yes.
being a black boy,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And so when is it too soon to start these conversations? Is there such a thing as too soon to start the conversations? And how do we really lay a foundation, you know, in our homes to, as parents, just start, do something to really start building up a new generation that understands the truth.
I think we got to start with just acknowledge race. Like, start with acknowledging race. One of the biggest mistakes I made as a parent in raising my older son, Bryce, who's 14 now, is that he was born in 2006. I came into his life when he was two. That was 2008. 2008, Barack Obama gets elected, mm-hmm. right? So this is a time where for many Black Americans, especially millennial Black American parents who are younger, we were like, man, we might finally be realizing this post-racial society. We might finally be coming to the day where we don't have to keep addressing race so much. We broke the glass ceiling. And so a lot of us, and I'm going to speak for myself, I try so hard to keep my son's racial innocence intact. That I didn't, you know, my father was a Panther, my father, NAACP member of the Nation of Islam, Morehouse graduate. I grew up in a blackity black house, okay? I grew up reading W.E.B. Du Bois. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was a way I grew up. But there was a racial awareness that I had and a lack of a racial innocence that growing up in a society that did not want to address race, I was always problematic. I was always pushing the envelope. I was always making people uncomfortable. Oh, he's always talking about race. Well, race is always happening. Mm. But I tried to do it different for my kid. So I tried to keep his innocence intact. But then what I learned is that when we as Black parents do not address race with our Black children, we give white kids a head start. Mm-hmm. And we give them a sense of some type of privilege that unfortunately they don't have. So what happens is when racism does happen, they don't know how to call it. They don't know how to define it. They don't know how to name it. It's just like you have to teach your kids about, protecting their body and what is appropriate for touch and things like that. You got to teach kids what's appropriate in terms of how people deal with them in terms of race matters. Mm. It's the same thing. So I think if you've always, Hope, said something that I thought was dope that you got from Naomi, which was when children are old enough to make choice or make decisions.
Oh, yeah. That came from Star.
I'm sorry. John. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Yes. And that is the time when you should start talking about race. And I also feel that when kids are old enough to experience racism, it's time to talk about race. When kids are old enough to perpetuate racism, it's time to talk about race. So it's always time.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what I was going to say, too, is when, you know, we sat down and had a conversation with our friends Hayward and Star, and they literally said, if your child can choose which cereal they want mm-hmm. over the other, they understand preference. Mm-hmm. And so when they can start understanding preference, now is the time. And, you know, Wade and I have never acted like, oh, we know exactly what to say. We can jump in any of these conversations. Mm-hmm. We feel comfortable. We feel confident. Let's go. Let's have these conversations. You know, no, we have never once felt comfortable. It's not about feeling comfortable because that's my privilege speaking, right?
Right.
That's me being able to say, oh, well, if I'm uncomfortable, I can step away from the conversation. Mm-hmm. No, it's got to be the opposite. We've got to lean into that uncomfortability to really lean into these critical conversations. And, you know, I'm just going to shoot it straight and be real because that's what this podcast is about. And the bottom line is if we say, oh, no, my child is six and they're just too young, guess what? That's probably you being uncomfortable. So you're going to be uncomfortable at seven.
Right.
And you're going to be uncomfortable at eight.
Right.
And you're going to be uncomfortable when they're 13. And then we have teenagers who have not been guided or led or, you know, taught the truths. And what happens?
Yeah.
Right? Then they're old enough to be in the school system and start making decisions and start, you know, and formulating their own opinions. And so really the time is now. There's never a there's never a perfect time for anything. There's never a good, especially when you're uncomfortable, the time is now to start having conversations with our kids. If we truly want to see and make change, we can't just sit back and think about, oh, I hope the world's a better place for Maverick when he is 18 years of age. Right. No, if I truly want the world to be a better place for Maverick when he is 18 years, what am I going to do today? What am I going to do now? And so, you know, I think that as parents, we've got to push aside waiting to be comfortable and waiting to have the knowledge and waiting to have all of the answers to talk about it, because you're never going to have all the answers.
I think we also should be equipping our kids to be why the world is a better place. Mm. Like, don't allow them to just be the bearers of the fruit of everyone else's work. Mm-hmm. Teach them to put skin in the game. Teach them to be involved. Teach them to advocate. I think that is something we have to be intentional about, because we got a lot of free riders in society who are reaping the benefits of all the hard work and emotional labor that everyone else is putting in. And it's time for everybody to be invested.
And having difficult conversations, especially starting it, will never feel comfortable, I don't think. I think it's more of saying it's okay to feel uncomfortable, but I guarantee you the sooner that you start with your children, the more okay it's going to be as they get older, because you don't have to start from scratch mm-hmm. when they are older. And it's one of those things to where it can be something as simple as you as the individual first. You start noticing what's being left out on TV, on commercials, in movies, in books, and then you being intentional about providing your child those opportunities to see diversity and inclusiveness within whatever you're watching, whatever you're reading, whatever you're doing with your child. Yeah. It starts with you first, but it's noticing those things that are being left out intentionally.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, even some shifts and adjustments that we've made in our house that are just easy changes is what literature, what, you know, we all know the importance of books. Mm-hmm. What am I feeding my son every single day, right? As far as books and television and music and, you know, all of these different components.
Or who's welcome in your home.
Or who's welcome in your home,
that's
right?
That's huge.
And we've talked a lot about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, who we surround. And I know that things are quite different now with quarantine and pandemic you know,
but
it makes it a little challenging,
but closest to you in terms of who's in your social bubble right now.
Yeah.
Right. It's in your neighborhood.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
People are around you.
And, you know, for young kids, the exposure, the inclusiveness is what Wade was talking about. But for older children, start having those conversations when you are watching television or you do see magazines or you do have books. Who's missing?
Mm-hmm.
Whose voice is missing here? That's simple conversations to start getting, you know, your kids to see the world through a different set of lenses, that it's not just about what they see themselves in, right?
Right.
It's about seeing others as well. And so those are just simple little changes that you can make in your household to start a shift, to start a movement within your house.
Yes, I agree with you 1,000%. It really starts with just talking.
Yeah.
It starts with just talking. And I think we can all agree, as long as these children are old enough to receive the world around them, they're old enough to start receiving these messages.
Right. And when they ask hard questions and you don't know the answer, well, baby, I don't know the answer to that, mm-hmm. but we'll find it together. Where's our humility? I mean, why are we, you know, acting like as parents, we have to have all the answers? I think it's so important that we model for our kids, our children at home.
Especially as white parents.
Absolutely.
You should never know all the answers, but it's our job as white parents to do the work. Never, ever, ever should I go to Chevy and say, hey, tell me about X, Y, and Z if I haven't tried to at least do some work to figure out what I'm trying to learn about. If I go to Chevy with no research, no work at all, I'm putting the burden on him. And he, along with his parents and ancestors, have had way too much of a burden for me to just go to him and expect him just to spoon feed me. No, this isn't a black problem. This isn't a brown problem. This is a white issue, but it's an issue that we're all working towards together, which is, I think, one of the craziest things that we can ever ask for, is for the unity that we've pretty much seen during the summertime about taking the leap and doing it together. And trying to at least understand each other. And it seemed like a fad there for a little bit, and I think it was. But you've seen the work continue and it's back again. And I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I think for the folks that felt like they can kind of check out over time, like, oh, you know, July passed.
Right.
You know, folks started tamping back down. Basketball's back. Right. You know, it's like, all right, we get back to life. You know, let me just post my regular stuff and whatnot. But I think the world is not going to allow us to try to get back there. And as long as you try to, it will snap us back.
And, you know, as a parent or as an educator, I think if we're still sitting here and saying, well, I'm just not ready, that's one of the biggest issues that we have to address within ourselves, you know, is that there's no longer an opportunity to not be ready, because as we're seeing, you know, more and more and more, which this has already been going on for so long, this is a life and death issue, right? It is. This is not just a political issue, as a lot of people like to say. This is a life or death issue.
Yeah. I mean, it's so real. I was watching the videos of stuff going down over the weekend that, you know, that 17-year-old kid who was walking around with the long rifle and shot all those folks. And, you know, I was just baffled just sitting there watching, like, what was going on, because it shows you. I posted in my story today. You could see video from before stuff went down, when it went down, afterwards. And it's just how dangerous white privilege unchecked can be.
Unchecked.
Unchecked, right? Where, you know, everyone else is getting yelled at to get off the block, but the cops are giving you water. Where you can shoot several people dead in the street, harm people, walk right by the cops and they roll right by you and they see all these other people as the threat. Like, it's just, it's a scary, scary thing to see. And sometimes, man, I try to be conscious about what I watch before we have conversations like this, because I know it, like, gets me burnt up inside. Like, man, are you serious? Did you see this? But we can't continue to turn away.
Right?
Like, I don't get to have the privilege of not being aware of what is going on, because that could be me.
Right.
That could be my son.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That could be, you know, any of my neighbors. It could be you.
Right.
You know, it could be Wade if he comes out. You know, Wade's been out marching with us. It could be any of us. And so it's the reality that we got to really deal with stuff unafraid.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the perfect way to say it, is to do it, like you said, to do it afraid, to do it even if we are afraid. You know, the last thing that I want for Maverick to come back and say to me one day is, Mom, why didn't you tell me the truth?
Mm.
That is I'm not going to have all the answers, and I'm not going to raise him perfectly. And I don't, oh my gosh, as a mom, I'm still trying to figure it out literally on a second by second basis. But one thing that we can all commit to doing is telling our kids the truth.
Yeah.
And the hard truth. And that is not easy. And I'm not saying that, listen, the truth, conversations with truth are the hardest conversations to have.
Yes.
But I never want for him to come back to me and say, why didn't you tell me the truth about this? Why didn't you? And for me to have to say it was because I was too afraid.
Right.
Because what is that going to teach him to do with his kids and with the next generations, is to always be afraid and to let fear dictate what impact you're going to have. You never want to allow fear to create your impact or to keep you from your impact, I guess. And so, you know, I think that fear is out. And doing it afraid is what we have to do as educators, as parents. We have to be in the here and the now. We can't just bury our head in the sand and say, oh, I wasn't aware. Because everyone is now aware.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we don't even have that excuse. Before, yeah, with lack of social media, or maybe I'm not on social media, you can maybe say, I didn't know. But now that's not even a relevant piece of the conversation.
Now it's worse.
Right?
Now it's worse if you don't take a stand or you don't try to do the work. Because I believe, I mean, you need to check and see if you blacked out on Tuesday. If you blacked out on Tuesday, you know, or you have the responsibility to know. One thing I want to point out, Shivy, is something you mentioned quickly, was just unchecked privilege. And I think the key component of that is the unchecking part, because privilege isn't, I don't believe it's going to go away in our lifetime. It's sad, and I don't believe that it should stay around, but it's hard to say that it's not going to go away. And so teaching Maverick the truth is teaching him that he does have privilege. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got a lot of it. I mean, he's a male, number one, and he's white. That's pretty much all I know right now. He's 15 months.
He's blonde and blue, too.
He's blonde and blue. Yeah, there we go. He's a big guy. He's probably going to be athletic. But anyways, besides that.
Wade is manifesting the athleticism. Did you hear it?
It's going to be there. Exactly. He's going to be a superhero.
He got future stud energy on the way.
He's going to be a superhero with Christian. Christian could be Spider-Man.
There we go.
And then Maverick can just be Batman. A Power Ranger. Or Batman's fine. Batman is fine.
Captain America.
That works. It works.
Captain America.
But teaching Maverick that he does have privilege, we have privilege, you have a certain privilege
absolutely.
That Hope doesn't have. Hope has one. But we're sitting in this room. I have more privilege than both of you guys combined, mm-hmm. and I know that. Mm-hmm. But how am I going to use that privilege in a humble way? And being intentional about that, I think, is challenging. And learning that I had a privilege at the age of, oh my gosh, I guess 28 probably is when I really, really recognized it, is insanely too late. That is mm-hmm. way, way too late. Mm-hmm. And going back to what you said earlier, and Hope did too, is just when these kids, when Maverick goes to school, he has to recognize, oh, that was biased, that was racist.
Yes.
How can I stand up for so and so? Just like someone would stand up for a bully. And I think that's kind of where I'm at right now with Maverick. And it's one day at a time. It's understanding that, hey, we've got a heavy job on our hands. But again, not to put a huge burden on him, but enable him, help him understand.
Yeah, empower him.
Empower him.
To know the truth and to speak truth and to stand up for truth.
Right.
And I think that's what's so important. And so
but also how you guys are raising him is going to go a long way to making that innate. To making that natural,
right?
So when you grow up and you have black folks around you on a daily basis that you foster a tight relationship with, that you genuinely have love and affinity for, it becomes almost impossible for you to ever see injustices and things like that occur around you. Know that it is because of race, and for that to be something you can be quiet about, like it will be innate because people fight for their village. Mm-hmm. Like just naturally, right? Like, you know, if you saw something going down with one of your neighbors, maybe the ones you like the best, but one of your neighbors, you know, you're going to be there to try to help them out. You know,
right.
If it's your family member, you're going to be there to help them out no matter what the threat may be for you. And so the same energy happens. Like, you know, I don't think it's just racial lines that kind of create our villages. A lot of times it's about, are we invested in the same things? Do we care about the same things? And that's kind of what creates our village. Like, you guys have become a part of my village.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we have a lot of commonalities, right? So people from the outside looking in probably wouldn't have any idea. But the way I come and ride for Hope and Wade, you know, it's
right.
like I would for any of my friends that I grew up with. That is because y'all have become tight-knit with me. And so with Mav, he's going to have that.
Yeah.
He's going to have that. And I think that is a product of raising your children with intentional inclusivity around them.
Yeah. And, you know, setting up an environment where we're normalizing these conversations. It's normal to have these type of conversations. But if you never start them, how do you expect them to become normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, it is about truly ripping the Band-Aid off, just diving in, getting started, saying something, standing up for something, doing something, because each time, I'm not saying that it's going to get a little bit easier, but you're going to learn.
Yeah.
And with learning comes growth. And so that's what we're looking to do here. We're not looking to always have to get to a place where we have all the perfect answers and we know everything. No, we're looking for a place to grow into to what, you know, our good friend Brandon always says, to fail forward. If I'm going to fail, I'm at least going to fail in a direction of growth,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if we never start, how are we going to do that? And so, you know, for parents who might say, or teachers too, because we have a lot of educators who say, oh my goodness, well, but I teach in a predominantly, you know, all of my students are white.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do I have these conversations? Or maybe it's a family who says, you know, we live in a predominantly white neighborhood or all white neighborhood. My kids go to an all white school. They play sports with white, you know, all white kids.
Mm-hmm.
How do they start making these shifts and changes in the classroom or in their home to start really, you know, being aware and conscious of who they're surrounding their children with?
They have to be intentional, like you were, to get out of their silo. You have to be intentional about bringing people into your world. And I believe that. Like, we live in a day and age where you can be interconnected with folks across the world, across the globe, within
right.
a moment. There is no excuse for us to only be having conversations with people who look like us or live around us anymore. Those days are gone. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're an educator and you want a place to talk with Black educators, well, hi, my name is Shivy. You can follow me on Instagram at Call Me Shivy, where we have Teacher Talk Live conversations every night. And educators are talking about race and talking about these things That's on right. a regular basis. Like, mm-hmm. And I'm not the only one. There's, you know, the Lanisha Tabbs of the world and the Naomi O'Briens of the world and Vera. And, you know, you got all these folks out there who are having these type of conversations. So there's no excuse. Like, we're here.
Right.
Just open your eyes. We're here. And as far as parents go, I mean, listen, there are communities all across, Facebook groups all across, that you can tap into. You can create these connections with folks. You just got to do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. You got to be intentional about it. And it's hard at the beginning because you're not used to it. And it's something that's new. But just like with anything that's new, once you start, you got to be consistent, and then it'll become habitual.
Yeah.
And then it'll sink in on what your purpose is and why you are doing these things in the first place. And you got to start. You just got to. And I think that's kind of what kind of leads us into what we did this summer. Like, when all of this started happening this summer, we didn't really know you, Shivy, personally. Mm-hmm. We did the Blackout Tuesday. We were having a virtual conference. We did the Blackout Tuesday, and we had learned so much from you talking about you need to start looking at these Black people and these Black educators and these Black communities with these honest and courageous conversations. Hope and I have been watching your Teacher Talk Live on Instagram for about a month or so, and we were like, you know what? We don't know nothing from nothing. But we do know where to send people, and that's what we did. We sent our community to your page that night,
yeah.
And it was so odd because we tuned in, and the conversations that you were having that night, you hadn't planned it.
No.
We didn't plan it, but those conversations that were going on that night, it was like it was orchestrated to be on purpose and intentional. This is where you start.
God is not allowing our walk to be an accident.
Mm-mm.
It is all on purpose. You guys tapping in with my lives and then kind of what has become of that for me and the educators associated with me, the Black educators across the country, it has been life-changing. We are no longer in our own silo, mm-hmm. right? There are so many white educators that are now engaging in conversations on my platform, on our platform, I'll call it, that it matters so much more now. You know, it's one thing for Black folks to talk about racism among ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's like, you can't really do nothing about it. Right. All we could do is talk. We could talk defense strategy.
Yeah.
What to do when, yeah. right? You know, it's kind of that thing. But when we're having conversations with white educators, it's more of a proactive conversation. Now we're talking about how we can shift systems and make real changes. It makes it a completely more effective and more impactful conversation. So I just first wanted to just express gratitude to y'all for that, because you've made the conversations on my platform matter so much more. Because now white educators who have been following you guys, who are engaged in your platform, are now stepping outside of their silo.
Mm.
And, you know, those are sparking conversations in school board meetings, sparking conversations in faculty meetings in schools across the country and whatnot. And I think that this is a perfect example of folks being intentional about stepping outside of their silos, mm-hmm. folks being intentional about bringing in new voices, new faces, new places, new journeys that folks have gone through and becoming better for it.
Yeah. And just taking it upon themselves to be intentional about stepping out of those silos and being comfortable with having honest conversations, because the conversations on your platform are still super honest. It's not like anybody shies away from anything. And if you're wrong, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in truth. And I think everything that I've always seen on your platform has come from a place of love, not necessarily kindness. And we'll talk about that at another date,
right?
But from love and justice, instead of it just being, oh, it's okay. No, that's really not okay. But we've learned so much from that and how to be about it. And in this whole conversation with this podcast, we've started with being about it. What does it look like being about it if you are an influential figure, like an athlete? What does it mean to be about it if you are a parent? What does it mean to be about if you are a teacher? And podcast folks, our community out there, believe it or not, Change starts in the schools. And how does change start in the schools? Well, it's the parents and it's the teachers working together to start that change in the schools. Mm-hmm. Everything we've discussed thus far are things that you can note inside of your districts and your schools and your communities to start an impact.
I'm going to challenge you.
Oh, yay.
Because I think that change starts in the home.
Oh.
Because I think, this is for me personally, but I feel like home is where the heart is, right? And okay. We have to do the heart work within ourselves as educators, as parents, before we can ever, you know, influence our students or influence our children. Because at the end of the day, if we're just doing something because it's trendy, because we feel like we feel that white guilt, right? We feel guilty. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I should say something. Mm-hmm. But we don't really feel that on the inside and we haven't really done the work within ourselves to believe what we're saying, then why are we saying it in the first place? And so as educators, we really have to think about that. Have I done the work within myself? And I don't mean to say, oh, I've got to put everything on pause. I haven't done the work within myself, so I'm not really ready to do it in my classroom. That's not what I'm talking about. This is a matter of urgency, right? Yeah. This isn't, we can just, oh, I'm going to take the next 6 months and really, you know, do the work internally, and then I'll talk to my kids about it. No, that is not what I'm saying. But I'm saying we've got to check our privilege. We've got to check our bias. We've got to check how we feel about things and do the work within ourselves before we can really impact others, because we don't just want to do something to be performative. We don't just want to do something to act a certain way because we feel guilty or because we should be saying something. We want to do it because we feel it. We mean what we say and we back what we say 100%, because that's where the action's going to come from.
For sure. And yeah, I agree with you. I mean, we did just have a whole, you know, conversation about when we should start doing the work with our kids. Yeah. And so I think we're in agreement that the work definitely has to happen before kids are our school age, but it definitely needs to continue to happen within our schools too.
Absolutely.
And I think although it may need to start, you know, from the cradle,
right?
Yep. Right. Mm-hmm. It has to be supported. It has to be continued on the other side.
The momentum just has to keep going. I don't disagree with you that at all. And I'm glad you pointed that point out, because it's very important that it does start in the home. And you can't make a change that needs to happen and for the right reasons, like you said, if it doesn't start with you internally first, and you feel it and you know it and being intentional about it, and then also then being able to spread it throughout your home, and it exudes from your home into those other places in your community.
Yeah, we call this learning out loud.
That's what
right.
It is.
That's right. No, because I think from, you know, from Wade's perspective, it just really emphasizes the fact that we do have to be more intentional about schools in our schools to be doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, still, you know, it's a chicken and egg kind of situation, right? Mm-hmm. And that egg is the home. You know, that egg is the home, and, yeah. and that chicken, you know, is definitely in the school. So we, you know, both are true.
You've done the work in schools, and we've done the work in schools as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. You've done this work a lot longer than we have, obviously, being a Black male educator. What advice do you have for educators out there who say, you know, I want to have these critical conversations, I want to open up conversations and dialogue in my classroom, but my parents don't agree with my opinions or my views on things, and they're really giving a lot of pushback against these critical conversations? What advice do you have for educators? Because I know we hear that a lot.
Yeah. And listen, that's not just white educators who deal with it. It's especially Black educators. Mm-hmm. You know, I get challenged all the time about stuff, but you do it anyway.
Yeah.
You do it anyway. And you make it not so much about your opinions and your perspectives, but you make it about truth. And you give kids the paint palette, and you give them the canvas.
Yep.
And you teach them it's not black and white, it's the canvas, and they can paint the picture how they see it. And you give them all of the things to be most honest about what the picture looks like. You have to equip them with the truth on both sides. You gotta play devil's advocate sometimes. You gotta make them look at things for what is there and what's not there. Very much like you were talking about, who's missing.
Right.
Those kind of things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I was gonna say, you know, that's one of the most valuable pieces of information that I took from the Be About It conference that we hosted, was it's not about you expressing your opinions and, oh, I feel this or I. It's about, like you said, giving kids the canvas and allowing them to be the artists of the classroom, which is how we should be doing things anyways as educators, right? Mm-hmm. But really facilitating conversations that allow students to start having dialogue and really having those critical components. And it does start with the question as simple as, who's missing from this picture?
Mm-hmm.
Who's missing? Whose voices aren't heard? Whose voices are heard the loudest? Why do you think that is? Why do you think these voices are missing? You know, it's those simple little changes that we can make in our classroom. I think we make it much too complex. And like you said, we don't really need to push our viewpoints or opinions out on our students. We need to allow them an opportunity and an environment to be able to formulate their own.
Also, when kids see you walking it, they're watching it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My students, you know, I had a yesterday, literally spent 30 minutes of my class having a heart-to-heart conversation with one particular young man. We stopped talking curriculum, stopped talking econ, all this other stuff. We were talking about, I don't know, production possibility curve or something like that, right? So we stopped talking about that to have a conversation about the fact that he could have impact on politics or could have impact on the community, that things being messed up around him did not have to just be that way. And so being able to have that talk, but to show him, hey, look at my Instagram page. Look at this march that we went to, but then look at this board meeting we were in, but then look at this thing, and showing him how it actually became something real. Mm-hmm. So when a kid can see how you walk, it makes a lot of the, I guess, negative perspectives or apathetic perspectives on things, it kind of quells them. It puts them to bed. It's like, those things can't exist if I see this.
Right. And I mean, showing that and exemplifying that, it goes even further than that. It goes with what we're talking about. If you bring it back to the curriculum, that's the easiest place. I'm telling you, as a white person, that's the easiest place to start, because that's something you can tangibly do. Mm. Especially if you were teaching history or social studies or reading books or whatever the school district gave you.
Or
watching a television show. If you're a parent and you're doing this hybrid thing or you're virtual teaching, you can do this too. You can see and we're not only talking about black versus white, we're talking about women versus males.
Yes.
And finding those facts and, like Shivi, you said, those truths to present to your students and to your kids and children at home is going to open their eyes to a whole new world that they have just been secluded from, because this whole thing is systematic. And how do we break that? It's about presenting this information, allowing them to paint the canvas, but with the whole truth instead of just part of the truth. I taught mostly white children this last year, and I found gaps to where Juneteenth was missing in the curriculum. And I would have these parent meetings, and they said, well, why aren't you using? I said, well, I am teaching this, but I'm also teaching about this component too. I literally took the textbook out. I flipped through it, and I said, I guarantee you, if I flip to any random page in this history textbook, and I challenge you guys, if you're listening right now, get your child's textbook and see, flip it 10 times and see how many white males, if they have a history social studies textbook, how many pages land on white males. That should open your eyes more than anything else. And so finding those gaps, seeing who's presented more than anyone else, is the easiest place to start, and then you can grow from there. This isn't something that's super difficult. It's not that challenging. And that's why we want to have these conversations, because we want to give you the tools to make a better change and an easier change for you and your kids.
100%. And I believe our predominantly white communities are the spaces that need to be having these conversations the
Absolutely.
Most.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The most.
And that's why we say, you know, don't just, when we tell people to, you know, live outside of your what you've already created and developed, maybe you need to go and expose your children to different environments and different cultures and communities, mm-hmm. and bring that into your home, mm-hmm. as well. That doesn't mean that, oh, I just go and find my black friend named Shivi and then I expect him to do the work for me with my kids. Every time I have a question, let me just run to Shivi and expect for him to explain everything to me. No, we, as white people, as white parents, as white educators, we have to do the work. But it doesn't hurt when you do build a community and you do build relationships with someone like a Shivi, to where when I do have questions, if I've done my part, to then go to him and say, I've researched this, I've looked up this, mm-hmm. and ask questions, because he's given me permission, and our relationship gives me permission to be able to do that. Right. But you don't just run up to, you know, a black educator and say, hey, I need information about that. That's not how you build a relationship and build a community.
I was having a conversation with Lanisha about this, and we were talking about how we get these, like, you know, you got to keep scrolling these messages for so long from, like, white educators, white folks, and they're, you know, spilling their guilt out to you, or their, you know, whatever. And many of them mean absolutely well. Right. Some of them, it feels very performative, but it does become a thing where, you know, especially if you have a sizable platform, you get 20, 30, 40 of those a day. That's a lot. you know, you can't address everybody. And it's not that you're trying to ignore folks. It's just that, you know, I got a life to live, like, right. in real life, too.
Well, not only that, I mean, I can imagine it's rehatching some trauma that,
sure.
that you have definitely have experienced in your life. And so going into these conversations, if you are a white individual, you don't take that lightly, especially if you have a relationship with someone who you trust and that you love and that you care for, because these are, like we said, these are critical, but they are courageous, but they are very difficult conversations to have. But I'm so glad that you mentioned that, Hope, because never once have I not felt comfortable to go to Chevy with a question or have a conversation. And I think it's because of the relationship that we have.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the whole beginning of this podcast of we've got to get out of our silos, like Chevy says, and we have to open our home and we have to include people in our community, in our neighborhood that don't look like us.
Well, I think just don't expect that just because someone is black that they have to talk about it. Mm. Or that they want to talk about it. Mm. It's that relationship component, like you're saying, but it's also the, you know, asking permission and really developing. Yeah, I understand. Yes, I know that Chevy is open to any question that I have. Not, yeah, because of the relationship, but also because we have a mutual permission, you know, right. to have these conversations. And right. so I think that that's so important, too, is not to just assume anything that oh, they have to teach me about this. No, they
no,
don't.
No, but also when you see black folks that are doing the work, that are sharing, that are doing it in a way where you can compensate or invest in what they're doing, do it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, stop trying to get the freebie off of folks all the time. Like,
right.
you know what I'm saying? Buy that virtual conference ticket. Buy, right. you know, subscribe to that Patreon. Like, you know what I mean? Like, support these folks that are doing their work. Black folks deserve to be compensated for their emotional labor.
Absolutely.
Plain and simple.
Well, listen, this was just the tip of the iceberg. We know there are, we've been, like we said, doing this work with Chevy since this summer, prior to the work that we were doing within ourselves and, you know, within our communities. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. We definitely are going to have many, many more conversations about how do we advocate for social justice? How do we address issues with social justice? How do we make sure that our homes reflect this movement? Because it's, like you've said so many times, it's not just a moment in history. This is a true movement. And yeah. so I love the question of which side of history are you going to be on, right? I've seen that so many places. And that just really, for me, I'm like, wow, raising a son, which side do I want him to say, oh, my mom stood on that side of history.
That's right.
Oh, my dad stood on that side of history. And so that's how I reflect as a parent. So really just starting, you know, even if this conversation just put you in a reflective state, start there.
Yeah.
Start with your reflective state and start really evaluating your bias and your privilege and what position you take in this. But don't stay there. Don't just stay in the state of reflection. Then what are you going to do about it? How are you going to start conversations? How are you going to act on, you know, those feelings that you're having, the reflection that you're having within yourself?
Mm-hmm. You got to think about what torch you're giving your kid to carry.
Yeah, yeah.
What torch are you giving your kid to carry?
That's such a great way to end this. And so thank you, Chevy, for joining us. And thank you for being a part of this conversation. We look forward to having you definitely on the podcast coming soon.
This is an honor. This is an honor and a privilege. And I'm looking forward to seeing all the great things that y'all are going to do. Like, y'all, this is exciting.
This is the community.
I mean, you know, it's that, still
that's
new.
That's your thing, though, right?
Hey, no, that's our thing.
Okay.
It's still new, but thank you for joining us. Thank you for being a part of this. You know, if you are still here and you are still listening, thank you for being a part of these critical conversations and not being afraid to make yourself uncomfortable, because that's where true learning takes place. So with that said, we'll see you next time, everybody.
All right. The New EDU is hosted by me, Wade King.
And me, Hope King.
The show is produced by Chelsea Harfouche.
And edited by Andrew Weller, with production support from Sterling Coates and Chase Mayo.
Cameron Berkman is our executive producer.
The New EDU podcast is a 3% Chance production.